Aloha, my name is Kavika Pagram. I am the Hawaii State lead organizer for U.S. Youth Climate Strike.
Okay, all right. Dyson?
Aloha, my name is Dyson Chi, and I'm a 17-year-old high schooler living here on Oahu. I'm one of the speakers for the climate strike.
Oh, wait. I forgot to ask you. What school are you? Do you go to?
Oh, okay. I go to Waipahu High School.
Okay, Waipahu High. And how old are you, Kavika?
I am 18, like 4 days ago.
Okay, you're 17. Dyson, where do you go to school?
I'm actually homeschooled.
Homeschool, okay. Okay, great, okay.
Hi, I'm Kristen. I am 17 years old. I go to Campbell, and I'm the Hawaii State Logistics Director.
Wait a minute, for Global Climate Strike or whatever it's called?
For Hawaii Youth Climate
for
Strike.
For Hawaii Youth Climate Strike. Yeah. Kristen, what's your last name?
Brown.
Brown, okay, got it. Okay, we are very good. Okay. You know what? Can we start with this, guys? Think back. If someone from another planet were to ask you, what kind of planet is this anyway? I mean, Kavika, how would you describe Earth to somebody who from another planet?
Oh, that's a heavy question. Okay. So I was at a camp for Parlay TV, and it was called Ocean Uprise Camp.
For Parlay TV?
Yeah.
Is what?
They originally were a design company, and then Cyril Gooch, who's the owner of it, the founder of it, he ended up kind of getting super inspired about the problem of plastic pollution in our oceans. And he had turned that design company straight into basically an environmental advocacy company. And so they do all types of stuff, like partnering with Nike to create shoes out of fishing nets. And just going around the world creating products that kind of spread the awareness of plastic pollution. And so they're awesome. And so they did their first year, and it was an experimental kind of camp. And so the camp that they did, they had speakers, and one of the speakers referred to planet Earth almost as if it was its own spaceship. So that's kind of how I look at planet Earth now. And the different factors of Earth, the political factor, geographical factors, environmental factors, I like to think of those as kind of like the people on the spaceship. And I like to think that when somebody's kind of going off and they're asking about how would you describe planet Earth, I would say that the political factor of Earth is almost kind of like that kind of teammate you have that's on the spaceship that's overbearing and overcrowding and it doesn't want to listen to anybody else. And this political factor just wants to take over and do only what it wants to do and not listen to the environment or the geographical factors or the science to it. And so if people were to ask me how to describe Earth, I would say, yeah, you know what? This is one teammate that just doesn't care about anybody else and just wants to do what it wants to do, and that's how I would describe it. Is that there's just one person that just doesn't want to listen.
So you've kind of described the social factors at work there in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool, Kavika. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Dyson, you know, almost physically, how would you describe Earth?
I mean, physically, I would say it's the life that sustains us all. Without planet Earth, we as humans, as living things, simply cannot survive for now. And it's funny that Kavika used the analogy of spaceship, because the analogy that I like to use for the Earth is that we're a canoe. Living in Hawaii, I think that means a lot too. And when you're on a canoe, you have a crew. And that crew has to be able to work together to effectively get the work done and to be able to survive on that canoe. And most importantly of all, to be able to navigate to the destination that they want to go to. Earth is that canoe, and we're the crew on that canoe, and we need to work together. We need to collaborate with each other and understand each other in order to get to the goals that we want to meet. Because if we don't, if we start fighting each other, if we can't collaborate, then that canoe is going to stray off course. And if it strays off course, that could have disastrous consequences for us.
Mm. That one was awesome. I just want to point that out.
really interesting. Another like a metaphor for how to think about it. You know, where this question comes from is me remembering what the Earth was like when I was a kid. I mean, it was like, wow, you know, it was like acres of green and animals running all over it. And there was incredible fertility and generosity and, you know, just the incredible fecundity of the earth didn't have any limits. To me, it was like, but I'm just wondering if you guys have a different picture of it.
I actually feel the same as you. I feel Earth has come a long way. It has survived billions of years and metamorphosized and gone through changes and everything. And it has provided a way for us constantly, over and over again, no matter what we do to it, it has always provided a way for us to still be and to still live. And even the previous animals that lived here, when they lived here, the Earth also provided for them. I think of the Earth as a mother that's very nurturing and very giving. All the Earth ever does is give. They never ask for really anything in return except to not take so much. And that's what I'm learning now. And that's what's being more visible now, is that the Earth is asking us to please stop and to give back. The Earth usually doesn't, from what I've seen, and for what I am making in my head, the Earth has really never asked for much. They don't want the things that humans want. They don't want the things that animals want as of yet. It just wants to be loved and to feel loved. And as of right now, it's pretty obvious that we're not showing that we love it. And so I feel that the Earth is a mother, and it will care for us until the day we die, like a mother does. And we just have to care for it, show that we appreciate all that it's done and all that it's going to continue to do. That's what I feel.
Ooh, you guys are so interesting. You know, because I thought that you would just be talking about how afraid you are, how terrified you are of the Earth. Is that there too? I mean,
the Earth is a force to be reckoned with. Nature is a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, it's obvious. Nature can take away what it gives to us. But I think it's important to realize that, sort of going back to Kristen's analogy of a mother, it's like, right, your mom gets mad at you sometimes. Your mom isn't always going to be, oh, super happy with you, do whatever you want. All right, there's going to be limits to what you can do. And that's exactly how the Earth operates. And, you know, you got to understand that when the Earth does something, it's for a reason. It's not just doing it because can. And so, like that caring mother, perhaps there's going to be a volcano. Maybe there will be a tsunami or a storm.
Or maybe wildfires.
Wildfires are another one.
Deadly heat?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Earth talking to you.
Exactly. It's trying to convey a message to you, telling you something. Like when your mom, you know, scolds you for doing something, she's trying to give you a message. Hey, you shouldn't do this. The Earth is trying to convey that same message. Hey, you shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, I was going to kind of say the same thing. You respect your mother, it's all good. Don't respect your mother, you're going to get lickings. You know what I mean? And then, so the same thing, if you respect the circular economy, the natural economy of Earth, and whatever you extract from it, you give back in another way, it'll be all good. But then if you keep extracting selfishly and you just keep taking what you need for greed, essentially, then you're going to get lickings, you know? And lickings in this case is it's droughts, wildfires, increased intensity and amount of hurricanes as well. And all these things are just going to keep compiling up and up until we kind of decide to stop what we've been doing, reassess, and then start respecting our mother again.
Why? What do you think the people in charge are not getting?
I think that, so if I could describe it in a way, I think that the people in charge have gotten in charge because they've been able to kind of play with the system. And so they understand kind of how people thought back then and how people are thinking now. But I feel like they're so ingrained in how they've gotten to that where they've been that they're not kind of willing to, like I said, reassess and go back, take a step back and look at instead of what's going to happen by the end of their term, what's going to happen for the end of the next 8 terms, right? Where these people are going to be, where we're going to be in 2030, where we're going to be in 2045. And I think that instead of looking at it that way, they kind of been looking at it, you know, what's going to produce the best results for now to make me look best for the future, instead of what's going to produce the best results for the future that might not make me look favorable right now, but maybe in the future I'll have a better history.
You know, it's difficult. I can tell you three are sitting here going, well, we're making a lot of sense here. Why isn't the world changing? I think a lot of kids wonder that. What is not getting through here? How is the message going to get out?
Okay. So I think when we're talking about getting the message out, and we have to kind of, I think everybody on both sides have to kind of take look back and understand that government takes a long time to work, right? And it was designed that way. I mean, senators have 6-year terms, House representatives have 2 years, and so. A lot of these, and just the way that, you know, bills are scheduled and hearings and all that, they take a long time, right? And it takes a long time for the government to mobilize on the way that we need it to. But I think we also have to understand that this isn't just a general kind of situation that we need to take care of where it would take a long time. We need to mobilize on the scale that we did in World War II, right? We need to put into action all of our resources to get this done. And I think what people kind of just don't understand is just kind of the velocity and the speed of which climate change is heading right now. And so I think that...
Wait a second. Okay, let's just let that sit there for a second, because you said a really important thing. You're saying that it's not climate change, it's a climate crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How can we not realize that? Do you think people are actually realizing that now?
I think it's a little bit easier now, but you really don't notice it until it affects you, right? Because climate change is different. It's a storm, you know, and everybody's had storms their whole life. And I think what we're not realizing is just how frequent they're becoming and the intensity they're coming. And the only difference in terms of threat to life that this one has is that instead of having somebody at the end of a gun with their finger on the trigger, it's somebody emitting emissions that you can't see, putting into an air you can't see, with hurricanes that you do see. And so they're really only seeing the hurricanes, but they're not really seeing how bad the emissions are, the intensity of the hurricanes. They're not seeing how much we're having. And I think once we are able to kind of point that out in our messaging and how we communicate to other people, then we'll get, you know, that mobilization that we need.
We just had President Trump today talking about how he would like to stripping away the kinds of emission standards that California has already been working under for all these years, and 13 other states as well joining in on that. So we have the President of the United States wanting to kind of roll back emission standards in the U.S. I mean, what kind of how do young people look at that kind of action? Maybe Dyson?
For me personally, I'm going to say straight up that I think those kinds of actions are right now a terrible idea. I believe that if we're rolling back our standards now, instead of going up the hill, we're just letting that boulder come back down the hill, and now we're going to have to go back down the hill and push that boulder back up again to reach our goal.
Now, do you think America has a particular role in this climate crisis, the global climate crisis?
Oh, of course. Here in America, we, per person, we emit and produce so much greenhouse gases that I believe that it's really important for us to be able to take up the change. I understand that some people say, well, look at other countries, they're not doing anything, so why should we do something? Well, if we leave it at that and everyone has that mentality, we're not going to get anywhere. No one's going to want to step up and make the change. So I think it's important. Some countries are making that change, but I think it's important that we as America, we as a global leader, a really powerful country that many would say, I think it's important that we take action. Solid action, not just commitments, but actual action to deal with this issue of climate change, which has now evolved into, as you said, a climate crisis.
Kristen, you know, what would be the first things that we could do to, you know, as individuals or as a country? Which one would you like to tackle on that?
I would say as individuals, we know what we can do to bring down our carbon emissions, but I feel we actually have to act on them.
What should we do?
I know we can use less plastics, we can, the obvious ones, drive less and everything like that, but I know we should also vote those into office that can actually incorporate laws that can change it, that can make laws to bring it down, bring down our carbon emissions.
I know what you're saying, Kristen. You're saying that individual action is necessary, but we also need legislation to push the society toward, to get a little more leverage behind the change.
Yes.
I mean, are you starting to get political because of this or what?
I feel I am gradually, although it still takes me a minute to understand politics, but I'm starting to look more into, you know, the 2020 election that's happening and even local politics and just trying to learn my way around and trying to see what it is that I myself can do to improve conditions, that because we can't keep doing the same things we are doing and expecting change. And I know we also have to not force others, but influence others that maybe don't know or maybe just are oblivious to the fact that we're in a climate crisis. I know now it's becoming more apparent that we're in a climate crisis, but we just have to continue to educate and continue to push for change.
Do you think, I mean, does it have to, how can that be fun?
It's actually kind of fun.
It is?
I get to hang out with, you know, my new friends that I've made, and we get to be passionate about things that we want, and we get to make a way for students, and we get to make a way for kids our age, and we get to make a way even for adults that don't know. And I think that that's a really good thing to have. And then I'm a young voice, we're all young voices, and up until like a few months ago, I didn't realize how powerful it was.
I think also too is that the work that we're trying to do is depressing, like absolutely depressing. I mean, you look at the news articles every day and it's about, oh, this many hundred people died because of Hurricane Dorian, or this house is in California is now on fire, right? And it's depressing. But if you're not looking into the silver linings of the work that we do, which is, you know, getting kids involved, getting kids civically engaged, getting people registered to vote, right? Watching presidential debates, which is really entertaining now that they're all speaking in Spanish. And so, you know, if you're not looking at the bright side, then the work gets really dark. And if the work gets really dark, you're going to hate it. Right? And so having a positive aspect on this type of thing isn't more of like a surprising thing. It's kind of a necessity at this point, because otherwise we're just going to hate doing what we do. And if we hate doing what we do, we're not going to do it any longer.
Right? Well, Kristen was saying it's the people. I mean, are you really feeling like a global coalition of young people?
Yes. Yeah. Social media has blown up and everyone is so excited for Friday. And I'm so excited for Friday.
Yeah. And I mean, this is kind of like behind the scenes kind of organizing stuff. But we have like social media posts that are emailed to us every day from like Future Coalition, like a center of people. Our national finance director, the person that handles tens of thousands of dollars of money, is 14 years old, 14, 15, yeah. Like this entire thing is completely youth-led. And I mean, even Sunrise Movement, like the oldest person that you can be in Sunrise is 35. And that's like not even that old at all. And so, I mean, not only just a global coalition of young people, it is a global leadership of young people, which is so amazing to see and hear. And it kind of shows that it doesn't really matter how old you are. It matters that your capability, and we're really showing that even though we're young, we still have the capability of making the right decisions, the right financial decisions, and the, you know, by extension, the right voting decisions.
Wow, it's just so impressive. What actually are you asking for?
In terms of demands for the protest? Yeah, so nationally, we're hoping for the respective indigenous lands, I think, is a center one. We're also hoping for the protection of agriculture and biodiversity. Now, these things are really important because if we don't have the respect for indigenous lands, indigenous people tend to know their lands the best. And if we don't have respect for the biodiversity and the things that are already there, and we're trying to build off into a more sustainable future, if we don't have those two, then the future that we're building is not going to be sustainable at all because it's built off the wrong foundation.
You mean so those are two cornerstone beliefs there? I mean, where does that put you guys on Mauna Kea issues?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for everybody in our organization, right? Because everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But you know, Hawaii Youth Climate Strike, we actually went to the access road on Mauna Kea. And we got to see the culture there. And the great thing about you know, having talked to people on Mauna Kea is that they are not at all hypocritical. When we're talking about respect for indigenous lands, they're not only telling people to stop building telescopes on there, they're also leading by example. For example, on Mauna Kea, there's the, obviously you see the peak that in the distance, mm-hmm. But you also have the hill right about where the access road
right.
is. Yeah, people were going up that hill, obviously get the view mm-hmm. of the mountain of the Mauna, as well as the camp and the, mm-hmm. the blocking of the access road with the kapuna in it. And eventually, the path was getting so degraded, it was being eroded really fast because like thousands of people were going up there, and they closed it off, even though it would have been a great view. They closed it off completely to everybody. And only up until now, they recently opened it, very limited wise, because mm-hmm. they didn't want the erosion of the mountain. They're blocking certain places from having tents because they don't want to interrupt with the ecosystems that are over there. And so I think that indigenous people really know how to protect what's going on. And so if we're not respecting them, not only in Mauna Kea, but also with the Dakota Access Pipeline and Standing Rock, if we're not trusting them and their beliefs, then we're setting the bad precedent for the future.
Interesting. Did you two go up as well to Mauna Kea?
Well, I did not get the chance to go mm-hmm. up, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I also didn't get a chance to go up.
Mm-hmm. But it's just so neat when environmentalists and indigenous people get together.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not just environmentalists, too. It's funny because from what I understand, the people who go up to these kind of places, not just Mauna Kea, like Kavika was saying, Dakota Pipeline, Standing Rock, a lot of these people are just, you know, regular, everyday people. They're people who care about something, and because they care about a specific issue, they're making an effort to protect what they love. And that's really the core thing of the work that we do, is that we love. We're trying to protect something that we love.
Hmm. Do you think Hawaii's got any particular message or edge on a message for this?
I think, Hawaii was the first state in the nation, obviously, to do 100% renewable energy by 2045. And even though that goal was a bit late, I think it really established our state as the leader in the country for being, you know, environmentally friendly. And so I think if we can, you know, work with that precedent and be able to launch bills in the future that really set a high precedent, that we can get other states to follow. And so I'm hoping, and that's why I think that we're in a very special place, because we'll be able to get these things done, hopefully in the next legislative year, and really launch, you know, the coming steps for the other states in the future.
Be a model, huh?
Yeah, that's what we're hoping.
Okay, so what? One of them was what? B2B, 100% renewable by 2030. Is that what we're trying to do now?
That would be a really nice goal, right? Because that's what the science for the 2018 IPCC report, the 1.5, I think it was the SR, mm-hmm. The report, and so that's what it called for, and that obviously is just one thing. But there's also so many other things that we have to look forward to. We need to start teaching kids about climate change in schools. We need a climate curriculum. Because, for example, I was at Richardson School of Law, and I was doing a panel there. And I had asked the crowd straight up, how many of you have ever gotten a formal education on climate change? One person out of a group of probably like 25 raised their hand. Right, and that's crucial, because how can we take action on climate change if nobody understands it? So that's one thing. And then once we get people educated, then they'll take action. And the other one is Meatless Mondays. Right, we need to be able to implement like a mandatory vegetarian or vegan option every week in Hawaii public schools. Because one, not only is that better for the environment, significantly better for the environment, but that also saves costs, that leads to healthier students, that encourages local farming. And so, you know, this especially Meatless Mondays is a landmark bill that we have to get passed next year. And so I'm thinking that like if one thing we need to do next year is Meatless Mondays.
That is so great. You know, you have to have, I mean, it's so helpful to have a goal like that, one solid, measurable thing that I can tick off in mm-hmm. a few months, you know, and you can focus your energy on that. That is a crazy one, too. It really is, because people love meat, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's also the great thing about this Mondays. It's not a big sacrifice. Once a week, you know, and it's school-offered lunch, so if you wanted to bring your own food, you could. Right, but we're hoping that if we do this once a week, right, it'll open people to the idea of a vegetarian or vegan option, right? And so, to extend that, it'll once people are open to the idea, then they try to experiment at home maybe, and then it hopefully leads people to a track of hopefully, you know, kind of lowering their meat consumption. I think it's unfair to expect that we have a five school day, you know, meatless option, because that's not really fair to everybody. And I'd be a hypocrite if I asked for that, because I'm not even vegan, right? But I think one meal per week is just a good starting point to get people introduced to the culture, the food, the taste, and then hopefully that sets them up for the future.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's actually doable.
Definitely, yeah.
All right. Well, I love this, your application to Hawaii. We've done so well here, guys. Is there anything else particularly that you wanted to draw attention to? You guys?
Actually, another one of our demands locally is for the Honolulu City and County to pass a couple of bills. So the first one is called Bill 25. This one relates to EV readiness and solar water heatings in homes. And so passing this bill would be quite huge, actually, in helping to promote cleaner energy in Hawaii.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. You know what? Could you go through that again? Because when you said EV, I thought you meant EV, bones.
Oh, no. Yeah. So this sorry. Electric vehicles. Yes. Electric vehicle charging stations.
Mm.
And then a second bill that's in there is called Bill 40. Luckily, two easy numbers to remember. and this one relates to plastics. Plastics such as plastic straws, stirrers, utensils, hopefully styrofoam, what's left of plastic bags. And this is really crucial because plastics, I think a lot of people separate plastics from the issue of, you know, climate change. But ultimately, plastics are completely intertwined with the issue of climate change, because plastics, when we produce them, we're extracting fossil fuels from the ground to create them. When we burn plastics, like we do in Hawaii at H-Power, we contribute to climate change. When we leave them in dump sites, they release methane. That contributes greatly to climate change too. Methane is more potent than carbon dioxide. And so because of that, plastic pollution is something we have to address if we're going to tackle this issue of climate change seriously. So these two bills, supporting them is huge. And if we can get them passed, that would be amazing.
Great. Thanks for telling us how we can help. At this point, like, just tell us what we can do. Kristen, do you have anything else for me?
Yes. On September 20th from 4 to 6, there will be a march on Oahu, also on the other islands. Those are on the website, but there will be a march at the governor's mansion, and then we will go to City Hall, and then, no, sorry, we will go to the Capitol, and then we will march to Hale Hall. And go ahead, Kavika.
So we start at 4 o'clock at Washington Place, right in front of the governor's mansion. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we'll get our way onto the Capitol. We'll do some speeches. We'll have Kaniela Ng there, which is great. Mm-hmm. And then when we're done with the speeches, we'll head over to Honolulu Hale, where Dyson will actually be giving a speech about Bill 25 and Bill 40.
Great.
And, you know, if you're not on Oahu, if you're on, for example, Maui or the Big Island, we'll have rallies there. You guys can check out the locations of those rallies. Big Island actually has quite a few, which is awesome. Activist culture there. I love it. So if you visit strikewithus.org, STRIKE, WITHUS.org, you'll be able to find all the locations for not only the strikes in Hawaii, but also all across the world.
Oh, that is just great.
Yeah.
You know, Kristen, tell me, when did you go from caring about climate change to doing something about it? How did you make that change?
I think it was officially when I went to Iceland. It was last year in the summer. I got a chance to go through the NAACP here, the Honolulu chapter, and I was invited, and I saw the direct effects of climate change in Iceland, and then I brought it home to Hawaii.
What
and
did
I,
you see?
I saw the glaciers melting, like glaciers that were thousands of years old, and they're just puddles and just pools of melted ice that once stood thousand-year-old glaciers, and that really, you know, was really effective. It showed how much we've done to impact the environment, that how much humans have done, how much pollution we've put into the earth for this to happen. And bringing it home was, I don't know, it was heartbreaking to see it actually. Because those, oh gosh, mm-hmm. I'm like starting over my work. But those ecosystems up there, they're all they've been broken and rearranged and torn down just because of what it is that humans have done. And I don't know, but coming home, I had to do something. I could not just sit by and do nothing anymore. And so I joined PAC, Pacific and Asian Affairs Council, at UH Manoa. And I don't know, it helped a lot. And
How did it help?
It showed me global perspectives, and it showed the effects of climate change not only here, but like in other areas around the earth, and how the island, any island, is gonna be underwater if we don't do anything. Actually, the year I got back, there was a few months before I went to Iceland, that year was a sea level rise summit, and it was very effective, and it showed me Honolulu could be underwater if we don't do anything. It'll like gain 3 inches of water, and what are we gonna do then? And I live in Ewa Beach, so that's gonna be underwater, and then it showed the effects in New York and how everything's gonna be underwater because we're putting all these emissions into the air and we aren't doing anything to stop it. We're just letting it pile up and pile up, and it has nowhere to go, so it just creates heat. And it's destructive. Human beings are very destructive. Ding, ding. That's like, whoa.
I know. Does it kind of boggle you that adults aren't doing anything?
Yes. Because they preach it, but they don't follow what they say.
Adults, I mean, we act like we know about it, right?
Yes. They act like they know about it, but then they just leave it in the air. And they try to tell kids, they're like, we had this problem, we created the problem, here, now you have to go and fix it. That's not fair to us. We didn't start the problem. We were born into it, but we have to fix it, which is not a problem, but it is a problem because we have to fix the mess that they made.
I don't know. Are you hopeful? Are you guys on this? Is this going to work out okay?
In terms of carbon emissions, I think it's possible, but it's only possible if everybody's involved. Everybody. Because at the rate that we need to change, I believe the IPCC report was 50% of 2010 levels. We're at 2019. Our levels of carbon emissions are substantially higher. And so we really need to get on it ASAP if we're to ever, you know, reach our 50% reduction goal by 2030. And that's a big ask, because that's basically, you know, splitting how we've been operating things for hundreds of years, since the 1880s, splitting that in half, splitting what we do yearly in half. And that's a big ask. And it's only a realistic demand if we're all on it. And so that's why I think doing really visual things like protests and rallies and social media posts, these are the best things, because if nobody's going to get involved, right, and nobody's going to get on it if they don't know about it. And so that's what we're hoping to accomplish with the strike on September 20th, is not only are we trying to get real action done at the same time, but we're also trying to influence people that don't know that much about climate change, that don't know about its disastrous effects. We're also trying to influence them and show them what those effects are and get them involved with our organization, 350, Blue Planet, and give them the tools they need to make a change.
Yeah, I would agree. It's at this point, it's all hands on deck. We need everyone to contribute to the solution and not the pollution. Like the time should have been 30 or 40 years ago. And so the next best time to act is now, before things get worse. But something that drives me and, you know, gives me hope is that people are taking action. There are people who are out there taking action. And decades ago, that number was much smaller than it is now. Of course, the number that we have now still isn't enough to completely avoid this issue. But with our growing numbers, if we can make those numbers grow even faster, which is the point of this movement, then I think we have a chance to do something about this issue, to tackle our climate crisis and, you know, pull out of this in one piece. Our canoe got to its destination safely. I believe we can do that. We have a chance now.
I'm tweeting that later. Part of the solution, not the mission. Yeah. That was really good.
You know, the Pope just said the other day, this whole thing is happening because of greed.
Yes.
Agreed.
I don't know. That's a greed. You know, that is like the toughest human character characteristic to try to revamp. I mean, you're saying that what world economies are based on is going to have to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're saying we're going to have to be different kinds of people.
Yeah. And that's the tough thing too, is that, I mean, you know, like I was talking about earlier with these people that are leaders right now. They got to that place playing the game. And they're obviously people that strive to be successful, right? And so we need to basically tell them now, like, hey, you need to let go of that a little bit so that we can actually move together as a species, which is difficult. And getting these people to the place we need them to, it's not going to work. And that's why we need to get people in office that understand the effects and that are willing to be humble and to, like, take solutions with an open mind. Right. And that comes back again to getting people registered to vote and getting people involved civically, getting people civically engaged and getting them at the voting booth so that they can make the responsible civic decision of voting in people that are willing to give up a little power, to give up a little bit of our place in the world, and in order to let us take action on climate change and to lead that for everybody else.
Do you maybe even have a lot of hope for what's being called the Green New Deal? I mean, could this actually be a terrific, you know, comet of our next prosperity?
I mean, this went from Green New Deal went from being a no-name, like, bill, resolution, whatever, in November to being one of the pinnacles of the Democratic elections for the president in 2020. That's insane, right? I mean, the speed at which this took place is kind of unheard of. I mean, healthcare in and of itself, I mean, it's decades going, right? And it's not even at the level the Green New Deal is. And it's been here much longer than the Green New Deal has been in ideation. And so I do have faith that the Green New Deal, whether it's still named that or something else so that it's more politically feasible, that it does get passed. Maybe not as a resolution, but as an actual actionable bill. Right, because right now they're trying to pass it as a resolution, which doesn't have any effective law, and so if we can get the things that it asked for passed in a bill, that's what we need, right? And then we get that type of action in every other country, everybody making commitments to reduce their carbon emissions by this much, to transform their energy by this much, to transition to clean energy by this much by this date. If we can do that in every single country, because we set that precedent in the United States, then we'll be so much ahead, like extremely ahead of the goal. And we'll be able to really be able to trust that the people in power can make the right decisions as long as the actual people are able to make the right voting decisions. That's what I think.
I am hearing now that the most recent IPCC report about land and climate change is saying that, you know, farming in the right way mm-hmm. could actually be about one of our best avenues to reducing, to mm-hmm. tipping the scales. In that, I think Hawaii, we've got a ton of scientists here who've been working on that for a long time. That is one area that Hawaii could really be a leader in. Mm-hmm. These kinds of climate change mitigation mm-hmm. actions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree. In Hawaii, I think we're in a unique position to take action and be a leader in the United States because, we're an island nation. We're the only United States that is completely cut off mm-hmm. from any continent. And because of this, this provides us some unique challenges. Right, things like supply line, we have to get a lot of our goods shipped over. How can that produces a lot of greenhouse emissions? So how can we cut that down and not only save us from producing all these greenhouse gases, but also reduce our dependency on exports? How can we become more self-sustainable? And so examples like that, I believe that Hawaii is in a unique position to do something and be a leader.
Hmm. Great. I mean, you guys are so fantastic. We've got every angle, I think, and I just can't thank you enough. I mean, are your friends really involved in this too? Are your friends, they think you're weird?
Yeah, that was exactly. No, I was telling Kristen the other day, I am a high schooler, so I go to those type of parties. It was a lot of beer pong. Anyway, I wasn't doing anything, but I go into the party, and my friend's the host, and she's like, oh, this is Kavika. He believes in climate change. And then I was like, I hope the rest of you do, too. And then everybody started laughing. But, yeah, I mean, no, it's. I think we still have a long way to go in terms of getting more people involved in, getting more
was
people
knowledgeable. Was that a huge buzzkill?
well, I mean, that was right when I got in, too. So, I mean, let's just say I sat in the corner for the rest of the night. Anyways. I guess that kind of just goes to show how much farther we have to go in terms of getting more kids aware of the climate crisis. Because I think we have a universal acceptance that climate change is bad. It sucks. We should do something about it. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really gotten the perception that our house is on fire. You know what I mean? It's the difference between, I burnt the steak or versus, oh, I lost my house. And so I think we really need to kind of to show the science and to get people involved and to show them that, hey, this actually is like a legit crisis. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we should probably do something for real about it instead of, oh, that's something, you know. I think we're far, but it's possible. And we've made so much, like, such great strides in the past months, ever since March 15, that I think it's definitely possible to do within the next 6 months.
Love it. Yeah, it's great, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Whoa, it's you so guys quiet. Are wonderful. You know that?
I just met them, like, I don't know.
Of it is?
Wait, say that again?
Okay. This is one of the really cool things about the climate movement is just how inclusive it is.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You see how the radio voice just kind of came on? Anyways, we were talking about people from entirely different paths of life coming together to fight this single issue, right? The gun violence thing, for example, right? Mm-hmm. That was started by Parkland kids because they were rich white people that could actually have the time to spend on doing something versus a black community in Chicago that was used to it because that's just how life was, right? Versus the climate issue, this affects everybody. And so everybody's involved. And so instead of having, you know, leaders that are single race, that are of a specific gender, that are leading this thing and taking charge, we have people that come from everywhere. For example, I mean, you know, the leading leader in this entire movement is an autistic Swedish girl that sat on the steps of her parliament and got this whole thing started, right? Versus the leader of the gun movement, who's, you know, this white guy that you know, fortunately had the extreme burden of having to go through what he did. But I think that's the great thing about the climate movement is just how diverse it is and how many different perspectives we can get. And I think that's in part what has contributed to the success of it. Is that all these different perspectives are able to offer something of value regardless of where they come from, right? I mean, so you have this moke kid from Hawaii, and then you have a girl from Georgia, and this guy from town,
the townie,
yeah. And then we're able to come together, having, you know, almost nothing in common, mm-hmm. and still being able to fight this single issue together.
Yeah. What are the biggest challenges that you're actually running into?
Biggest challenge.
Getting my friends, like my personal friends, it's one thing to just tell random people and them actually have interest in it because they've heard it. But like my actual friend that I see every day at school, like she knows about Friday, but I don't, like, sadly, low key, she's probably not going to come.
Oh, she better come.
She's going to go to the one at my school, at Campbell High School, but she's not probably going to make her way all the way into town. I don't know if because of circumstances, mm-hmm. or just. Because, but that's one challenge that I've noticed. And also balancing school and activism, that is real interesting. That's a fun mm-hmm. challenge. My mom, she's one of those people. You got to still keep up your, so like tomorrow, I'm actually flying to New York for the United Nations Youth Climate Summit. And then in the morning I have a I have the interview with Sunrise Hawaii. So I'm gonna Sunrise Hawaii News Now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do that in the morning. And then I'm gonna go to school to do my test for my AP environmental science class. And then I'm gonna go on a plane.
Yeah.
And all by, you know, 3:15 when the plane takes off. So that'll be very interesting. Dude. That's like, yeah.
You're going to the Global Climate Summit, though, in New York?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah, no, I'm very so excited. Envious.
And I'm going to the march in New York on Friday. I am so excited. It's from 9 to 12, and Greta's going to be there.
I'm not
jealous. I am so excited.
You're going to be posting on Instagram, or what are you doing?
Oh, yeah, yes. Okay, I will be posting on Instagram, and I'll be taking pictures and sending it to Kavika and Dyson, and maybe they can post it on Climate Strike.
Tag your Instagram. What's your Instagram?
Hell, I will.
Yeah.
My Instagram is _officiallychrissy_, and Chrissy is with a K-R-I-S-S-Y. And also Climate Strike Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. I should probably tag one. Climate Strike H-I, Climate Strike Hawaii. That's our social media for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Yeah, you should guys should follow us.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. That's the biggest struggle is finding the balance between wanting to do this and wanting to do school. Just like Kristen, there was this morning where I had my psychology test for my college level psychology course during the summer, and then when I was done with that course, I had to rush over to East West Center to do a speech to about 60 mayors on the mainland.
Oh my gosh.
It's weird finding that balance because it's such a difficult thing, and that also contributes to how hard it is to get people involved in the organization because it's a big ask, right? There are a lot of opportunities, right? Like flying to New York or giving a speech to mayors. But it also comes at a great cost. You have to sacrifice a lot if you want to get involved in this thing.
Yes.
But it also speaks to the strength of the movement because there are tens of thousands of kids organizing this thing, making those sacrifices to fight climate change, right? And so everybody's sacrificing something, and that just makes us so much more ingrained into the movement. And I think that's also why we're so strong. Is that we all gave a little piece of ourselves to it, and that sounds really cult-like. But, I mean, we all gave a piece of ourselves to it, and we're all working hard to fight it, and that kind of contributes to a lot of our success, I think.
That's interesting.
Amazing. I know, and look at you, Dyson. You walk in, and you're a celebrity.
Yeah.
People have already seen you.
Yeah. I'm not a celebrity.
From your participation in different ways. I mean, she saw you in almost a different topic, but your involvement. You know, you're able to be involved, and you are involved.
I mean, I have an interesting perspective. So because I'm homeschooled, I literally can dedicate my life to whatever I want. I don't spend any time in, you know, like official high school. And so because of that, I am honestly deeply impressed with people like Kristen and Kavika who manage to juggle school with their work. It's practically full-time work. But for me as a homeschooler, what I found really difficult was getting my foot in the doorway, right? When you find out about the issue, which I think is a stage that a lot of people are at, it's like, okay, I know that climate change is an issue. And what do I do, right? That's where people hit the dead end. And that nearly happened to me because for specifically plastic pollution, let's say, I went to the ocean all the time as a kid. And I saw plastic pollution with my own eyes. I knew it was a problem, but for years I did basically nothing about it because I didn't know what I could do. I was like, I'm a kid. What kind of power do I have? I don't know. So I'm not gonna do anything about it. So that's a really important thing is once you know about the issue, how do you get involved? If you're like some people I know wouldn't be proactive. I wasn't proactive. And so when that happens, it's up to people who do know this issue and have taken action to help share this is what you can do about it. And so it's really important to be able to empower people to do something about this.
What was the first thing you did? What was the first thing you did?
So the person who helped to empower me do this kind of work, I feel like would be my mom. Like, hands down, it's my mom.
Moms are awesome.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a Surfrider meeting. I believe it was a Surfrider meeting. In town, and so my mom was like, "Oh, you know, we should go to this meeting. You care about like you kind of care about this issue of plastics, right?" And I was like, "And she was like, okay, like you want to go?" And I was like, "Okay, I guess I'll go." And I did go. And after that meeting, I was like, "Wow, I can do something about this.
What? And what could you do?
About plastic pollution.
What could you do?
Like, I can actually, like, I can do beach cleanups, obviously, but there's also things like advocacy. I can go out to the legislature and let politicians know what I'm thinking. I can help to move bills for it. I can approach businesses and ask them to change, ask them to stop single-use plastics. And so stuff like that. Or I can go out to schools and do education at schools, talk to kids who are my age, right?
Who never even knew that this straw was such a bad thing.
Yeah. And so that's how it really evolved for me. And also an event that was in New Orleans that happened 2 years ago. They equipped me with the means to tackle plastic pollution. It's called Ocean Heroes Boot Camp. They have it every year. That one in New Orleans was their first year. And that event is like an event where they get youth from all around the world and they equip you with the means to tackle plastic pollution. Huh? So things like that. I was helped a lot by other people. And so that's why I feel like I need to give back to the community too.
Awesome. You guys, I mean, you have just laid out clearly how people feel, what the first step is, and then how you actually find some one thing that you can do.
Why don't I make it easier? If you're listening and you want to do something about climate change, you guys can email me at kkdpegram@gmail.com and take action on climate change. Just let me know. But yeah, I mean, the biggest barrier to somebody doing something is accessibility.
Right. Don't know what to do.
Yeah. And not having the tools to do it, even if you did. And so, email me, let me know, and I'll put you in the right direction to take action.
This kid answers his emails too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's up at like 2 o'clock. This is the thing. Like, he's up at 2 o'clock in the morning responding to texts within a minute. Like, that's literally the kind of time people like Kavika, like Kristen, are dedicating to this issue of climate change.
The number one sacrifice has been sleep.
Yeah. That's okay. We won't be getting much sleep if this issue
for
continues.
Drawings.
I know,
yeah, right?
Oh, can I say one thing?
Yeah.
I think it's really incredibly powerful. I said it already, but that the youth have taken it in their own hands because we've been forced to make the change and to make the difference. I think it's very powerful that we still encourage other youth. Because I know when I was first getting into this, I thought, like Dyson, I couldn't do anything. I'm like, I'm only, you know, like 14 years old, 13 years old. What can I do? Actually, I was like 15, 16, maybe somewhere around there. I'm only something teen years old. What can I do to make a change? I don't have a voice. I have to be an adult before I can have a voice. But this movement literally proves that wrong. You can be even 13 and manage thousands of dollars worth of finances, you know? And I think that's very powerful, and we have to keep encouraging that. We have to keep encouraging young people and tell them that they have a voice and that their voice does matter. Not whether they're old enough to vote yet or not old enough to vote yet. Even if they're in elementary school, they still have a voice. And if they have an idea and they think something is not right, their voice should not be silenced because they're not old enough. I think that's so powerful, and we need to keep pushing for that. So, yeah.
Yeah, some of the best speakers I've ever heard were 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So,
agreed.
I mean, you tell me about voice, man. They got it. Let me see it.
Awesome. Yeah,
awesome.
You guys can be the kupuna in your movement soon.
Oh, my God. If we even live that long.
We're a funny group.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you. Man. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes.
This has been a joy.
So much fun.
This was very fun.
Let's do this here. Turn around.
Uh-oh.
Turn around. Okay. We know we're talking about how to get money out of the equation. How?
Mm-hmm.
How?
Oh, thanks. Oh, okay. Can I repeat?
Well, Kristen started us on this. She's just sitting there and she's saying, we have to get money out of the equation.
Yeah.
As I said, that's the hurdle because society revolves around it. Yeah. That's literally what we've grown up on since the Americas has started, I feel like.
We're a podcast now.
Yeah.
I mean, everything we're talking about, obviously, is theoretical, right? Because these things haven't really been proven yet. But I think it goes on to the point that I was making earlier with World War II, the type of mobilization that we need on climate change, is that people shifted their mindsets from what they deemed necessary to what was good for the betterment of the country so that we won the war, right? So industries transitioned. People's lives transitioned. You had victory gardens going on. People were growing their own vegetables because they didn't want to take up too much food for the soldier supply, right? People, instead of Ford, I mean, they stopped building cars. They started building tanks. I don't know if it was tanks specifically, but you get what I mean.
Sure. Women joined the workforce. It changed the country.
Yeah, joined the workforce. Yes. Yeah, exactly. It changed the country. It changed how people lived their lives. And we need that same type of mobilization now and for the war that we have with climate change, right? And people, especially people high up, need to understand that there is sacrifice that needs to be made for the greater good. But that sacrifice can only be made when we realize what the fight is and when we can get the greed out of their heads, right? And get them to understand that they need to change their business practices, if not altogether, kind of completely take a 180 on how they've been conducting their business. And I mean, that's the hard thing that we're still trying to figure out. It's how do we do that, right? How do we get people to want to change? Because if this is how they've been doing it since 1880, this is how they've been doing it since the Rockefellers have been doing it. If this is how they've been doing it, how can we make that transition after 100 years of precedence?
You have to give me some incentives to change.
Exactly. And without incentive, without a true, clear incentive, nobody's going to want to change. But the question is, how do we give them the incentive? What kind of incentive do we give them?
You're telling me that money incentives, would they work?
I mean, Are you talking? Okay, so I kind of there is a coal is very popular and fossil fuels are very popular because they're government subsidized, and because they're government subsidized, they're much cheaper. If we can get that same kind of subsidization on renewable energy, the same one that coal's been getting, it would be exponentially cheaper for the consumer. And if the consumer wants it, companies are going to shift to want to take that. But it's difficult too, because a lot of the subsidized fuels that we have are our government contracts, so we have to figure out how to get around the contracts. And so it's a lot of very technical things that we got to figure out. But I mean, if we don't figure them out, then we're kind of screwed, aren't we?
I guess now's the time to figure them out.
Yeah. You know, like last 20 years or something. But
No, but I see what you're saying. And thank you so much for putting it clearly that it's not as though we don't know how to do this. We did this before for World War II. We do know how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, I guess one of the other things is kind of a little bit, I touched on a little bit, but figuring out who the enemy is, you know, because we knew who the enemy was in World War II. We didn't like Nazis. I mean, we published comic books about this dude in red, white, and blue punching Hitler. Right, we knew who it was. It was a physical person that we could put an image to, that we could personally and deep down inside hate with a passion.
Right, and right? Japs were hated.
Yeah,
in that
you can't. Yeah, I mean, you can't hurt. You can't hate a hurricane. Not the hurricane's fault. A hurricane's a reaction of a bunch of heat getting into the water and spinning around. Well,
but you can just fear it.
Yeah, a hurricane is a reaction. Right, it is the end result of somebody putting more than they needed to into the air. So now we got to figure out who that somebody is, right? And then when we're talking about messaging and we're talking about a person that has to be the enemy, we got to find out who that enemy is, because it is a person. It's not climate change is too abstract for us to make that mobilization on. We have to figure out who is the enemy. And once you figure out the enemy, then we can make that mobilization.
Who is the enemy?
Exactly.
I would personally say, like, I'm not going to point out any specific person, but I would say some of the people who have contributed really greatly to this issue of climate change are the businesses who purposely supported efforts and started efforts to spread anti-climate change propaganda, basically. These businesses knew that climate change was an issue, and they knew the consequences that it could face as far back as like the 1980s.
ExxonMobil.
Okay, there you go. You pointed him out. And so these businesses were aware of this fact, that climate change was going to devastate people. It was going to lead with people having their houses underwater and you suffering hurricane after hurricane after drought after storm after fire. And what did they do about it? They pretended it was fake. They tried to use their knowledge instead of helping people to make themselves ahead of the game so that way they could make climate change look bad before people were fully aware of it. And that's part of the reason why we have people who deny climate change is because of the misinformation that has been spread by these businesses, by these large corporations. And so if we had to put a face to the enemy, I really think it's these massive corporations who many of them are still fighting this issue of climate change, saying, or fighting climate change awareness, saying that, oh, it's fake, or, oh, we don't need to do anything about it because other people aren't doing anything about it, stuff like that.
Yeah, and I mean, not only in like fossil fuels too, but also, you know, that recycling sign with the three arrows? Guess who researched that? It was big companies, and they wanted to place the blame instead of on the corporation that they were. They placed it on the consumer. And they're like, you know what? It's your kuleana to reduce, reuse, recycle. It's our kuleana to make as much money as we can. You know? And so it's not only in fossil fuels, but it's everywhere. And so once we you know, I think once we find that out and once we see who the real perpetrators of this are, then we have our enemy.
That turned on a little light for me, and that jives with what I've been talking about with Chip Fletcher recently, because
I love Chip Fletcher.
Yeah, and it's also what you said, Kristen, earlier, because it's understanding that, yeah, I can do a lot. You know, I can stop using straws and so on, but really we do need that. We do need systemic change. Mm-hmm. We need systemic change on a large scale in industry and in government. So you guys are so onto that whole register to vote thing. I mean, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's time for innovation. Innovation, not necessarily technological innovation, but societal innovation to come.
Do you think, what role does culture play in that? You know, what kind of music and poetry or whatever else inspires you?
It plays a huge role because some people, you know, they aren't touched by words. They're not touched by speakers. They're not touched by books, articles. They're touched by things like music, art, poetry, things that deep down within us we love because they just have this magical presence to them. And so these types of, I believe the word is called artivism, where you use art to spread awareness about certain issues, is extremely powerful because you're reaching out to a group of people who might not be persuaded or who might be turned off by other more conventional means.
Ah, I've never heard that before. Artivism.
Oh yeah, there's an organization that goes around the world, painting like illustrations of our climate crisis on walls everywhere. So like they'll commission over, I think they have like 300 artists all over the world. And they'll supply them with the materials, and then they'll spend days working on murals about climate change. And so it's
fascinating.
It's great. Yeah, they'll put the murals inside of highways. They'll put it in really local villages. They'll put it everywhere. And it just gets people energized. It lets them see, like, this is how beautiful it is to tackle climate change issues. And it's just so inspirational.
I know. Things can make me want to change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what will actually make you change? Yeah. Well, I think wanting to change is a good first step. And then going through and showing that you can make things happen, that other people have made things happen, I think is the next step to getting people on the streets. And hopefully September 20th accomplishes that. Mm-hmm. It's a completely youth-led, youth-organized movement. And so we're hoping that, you know, showing our power, showing our collective voice together, I mean, we're hoping that eventually that's what's going to get more people out there, and it's just going to build, like, and it's going to roll down a hill like a snowball. And then 2030, here we go, you know?
Yeah. Well, I feel a lot better having talked to you guys.
I sure hope so. That's the goal.
Okay, this is our third time ending
this. Yeah,
so
I know, this is our third time, but it's just so worth it.
We could stay here forever.